Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're delighted you're listening.
Yes, we are. We'd like you to join in the conversation as well. Go to facebook.com/The Music Row Show. Join in. We'd love to add your questions to the mix.
Absolutely. And, you can also hit us up on Twitter in case you are better at Twitter. You can do us at The Music Row Show there. And then after the show, you can find us on Instagram, also at The Music Row Show.
Are we going to take pictures?
We are.
How about that? Okay. All right. Great. And we'd like to remind our listeners that we're on TV, of course, not only on Blue Highways TV around the country, but for our Dish subscribers, go to the Blue Highways TV channel, which is channel 73.
That's true. And we are here with hit songwriter, Songwriters Hall of Fame member Gary Burr has joined us, and we've actually locked the door. We're not letting him leave. So
we get 2 full hours.
We get to have him for another hour because we've got the key.
That's
pretty
right.
much is what's
That's
going on
right.
there.
So you were talking earlier when you first came to Nashville, pretty much everything you'd done prior to that was solo work, and then you've gone into co-writing and you took to it. But talk about being there for the song rather than the writer's feelings or egos. I mean, are there times where you got to walk a tightrope with whoever you're sitting across from?
Yeah, it's really a fascinating, weird situation to be writing a song and being creative with somebody. I have a lot of different people that I work with, and every dynamic is really different. Mm-hmm. I have, Georgia and I, my wife, Georgia Middleman, mm-hmm. She and I write a lot, and we write at night because we're together, and it's a very easy, very generous process. And then I write a lot with my friend Victoria Shaw, mm-hmm. and we're basically screaming at each other. You know, when somebody comes and writes with us, they always say that we're like an old Jewish couple. We argue all the time, and we don't have sex. So, I mean, and really, sometimes we'll write with a third person. They will sit there with their eyes like pie plates because we're just, you know, yelling at each other, and, you know, just, it's like an Abbott and Costello routine.
Right.
You know, really? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody, you know, and it's just really fun. And then there are other people that, you know, their strengths are the same as your strengths, and that's a problem, or you really compliment each other, and mm-hmm. where you're weak, they're strong. It's so fascinating, how many different ways there are to write songs, and how many, you know, ways personalities can either clash or really mesh in the creative process.
Interesting. Well, for any newer writers who might be listening, what do you need to know if you ever get a chance to write up, you know, or write with somebody who's more established than you are? What are there any kind of unspoken rules about how to approach that, especially from your side of the table?
Well, yeah, there are, you know, you really hit on it right there. Writing up is the biggest key that you can tell a young writer. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really gain anything by writing with people that aren't as good as you. Mm-hmm. You always try to write with somebody a little better that's within your reach, but a little better so that you've got something to learn. Right. And the idea is if you get that golden opportunity, you grab it and you come prepared and you come flexible, you know, and, you know, because none of your ideas may be the right one to write. You know, I always remember when I came to town, I did an interview in a magazine, mm-hmm. and they asked me, you know, you write with everybody. Who's left you haven't written with? And I said, I've never written with Harlan Howard, and that would be a big thrill. And as soon as the magazine came out, Harlan called me up and said, young man, come over on Tuesday at 10 o'clock and let's write. And I was like shaking, and I go to his office and I'm really thinking, I got to show this guy. I'm like the new gun in town. I'm going to smoke him. I'm going to just, you know, he's going to, he won't know what hit him. I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to just turn on the
awesome meter.
I'm going to turn on the hot donut sign of creativity in my brain and walk in that place. And I walk in and the room is filled with cigarette smoke because he chain smokes and I barely see him over at the desk. And I come in, I shake hands, and I've never forgotten what he said to me, and I say it to writers, young writers that come to write with me. Mm-hmm. He looked at me and he said, "Young man, you and I are going to write a great song. Probably won't be this one." And it just took all the pressure off because it just meant that he was looking at it as a relationship.
Yeah.
And the first one, you know, it's like your first time in the backseat of a car with a girl. You know, the first time, probably not an earth-shaking experience, but you
for
get
her.
A little better.
Yeah. For you, yeah.
What are you
or
talking
the
about?
Second, or right. third.
No, you misunderstand. You know, so I just always thought that was great. So you gotta lower your expectations when you write up and just, you know, learn, listen, pay attention, and, you know.
Well,
and,
just the pressure, the self-inflicted pressure of, I have to be awesome because this person's awesome. So I, you know, and to try to do that to yourself, that it's a great way to snuff out creativity. You know, when you're that freaked
absolutely,
out.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. You don't have to be awesome. You got to be
yourself.
You got to be a co-writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I think that it goes both ways. If someone new is looking up at you, like I'm writing with Gary Burr, you know, and they're looking to you to be awesome. That has, you know, it's anything.
Oh, they
you
get
do
it, baby.
That. Oh,
well,
of course. I'm sure.
Well, what are you getting at?
Yeah, Scott, what are you saying? That he's not? Is that what you're saying? You're implying that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Thank you. I know. Thank you. So, okay, let's talk more about the masterclass. There are still some slots available. It's April 26th through the 24th. Go to GaryBurr.com.
22nd through the 24th.
Right. Mm-hmm. Go to GaryBurr.com to find more details on that. Talk about unlearning bad habits. You've done your share of seminars and classes over the years. So what are one or two of the common bad habits that you see? Because I'm sure after a while you start seeing the same things over and over again. And maybe what's a quick way to overcome?
Well, you know, there's a lot of over the years when you've done it as long as I have, there's like no hurdle that you can come up against that you don't know a trick to get around.
Right.
You know, no matter if it's a rhyme you can't get or, you know, a logic point you can't figure out, there's 3, 4, 5 different ways to get around it that you learn after doing it for a long time. You know, it really is just sort of stripping it back down to the basics. When you learn, you know, when you learn the basics of how to write a song and keep it on point, and when you learn the different ways that there are to do everything, there's a different way that a chorus can be written, there's a different place to put a title, and every different place you put a title means you're going to write a different kind of a song. And, you know, bad habits are, you know, I mean, we all have the bad habits of, you know, you get used to playing the same chords, you get used to singing about the same things, you know, it's simple things like that, you know, sometimes, and there are tricks to, you know, snapping out of a rut so that you're not just writing the same songs over and over again. It's, you know, there's just tons of great techniques.
Well, I'm going to try the magazine one. Seriously, I'd never heard that, but that's a neat idea.
Well, the trick, you know, what that is that's a fun Sunday afternoon way to demonstrate the philosophy of not, you know, not of having an off-center idea to shoot for.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I've done in my songwriting masterclass is I send people into a room and they have to write a song with whatever instrument is in the room. Mm-hmm. And if the instrument in the room is a harmonica and they don't play the harmonica, tough. You got to write a song with a harmonica, right, or you got to write a song with a piano and you're not a piano player. It's a way to break that spell that you get when you pick up a guitar and you're going to the same G, C, D chord and the same finger picking. Yeah, and the same finger picking, you know, pattern that you always do.
Yeah.
And that's really when you're doing that finger thing, it shakes you. It rattles you. It you know, it's the same thing as picking up an unfamiliar instrument, so that songwriting is something new and fresh and you feel like, you know, you're taking your first steps again. And a great song always comes from that.
Hmm. Well, you may have already touched on this, but one of the things that you cover in your class is writer's block and how to get around that. So what are some of the maybe one or two little tricks that you do when you're stuck and you're like, either you can't think of anything or you're stuck in the middle of a song, you don't know where to go next?
Well, I mean, the simple generic things of the taking a break of this and that and all that kind of stuff. I've never had writer's block, mm-hmm. because I have all these different tools and techniques for getting around the situation, you know, or whatever that hurdle is. It really, you know, it's songwriting is a series of tools, and it's a series of you know, fun ways to come up with what you're looking to do is you're looking to write very old themes in a brand new way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very important to look at it like that. Nobody needs another love song. There's 100,000 love songs out on the street right now of Nashville, and a giant portion of them have been written by very famous songwriters. So if you're going to write a love song, you have to write a love song that comes from a whole new way. It's like in the pop world, one of the earth-shaking moments in pop writing was when the Beatles, instead of writing I Love You, wrote She Loves You. Because up till then, you always wrote songs from your own
first person
point of view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to write a love song where the pronoun was different,
mm-hmm.
You know, everybody kind of went, oh my gosh, nobody's ever done that before. And it's just it made them write such a different song to just take it from a different point of view. Every song is like a screenplay. You can just, you know, you look at where the people are in the screenplay in that room when they're talking to each other, and that's the song you're going to write. But maybe the song isn't written from her point of view or his. Maybe the song is written from someone in the next room looking through the door. Maybe the song is written from the point of view of the mailman who accidentally, you know, hears them talking outside the window. There's all little things like that that every step of the way you have to look at it and go, how can I say this differently? How can I take this from a different point of view so that the story is a little more clever and a little more unexpected? And those are the kind of things that, you know, that we try to have exercises to mm-hmm. help them try to do. And they come away writing better songs from, you know, just from a different angle, you know,
because
you got to write a song that nobody's heard it expressed that way, but everybody has felt it.
Right.
And that's the tough thing to do is you're writing about a personal take on a universal feeling.
All right.
I just bored myself.
Well, I'm just curious, what do these basics that you teach, I mean, are they, do they vary by genre if you were writing for this market or that market?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, there's things in the pop world that you get away with, mm-hmm. that in the country world you can't.
Like what?
In the pop world, when you write a pop song, mm-hmm. and somebody says to you, what does that line mean? You're allowed to say, I don't know. What does it mean to you?
Uh-huh. Okay.
In the country world, if somebody says, what does that line mean? Your song's not going to get cut.
Right.
Right.
You know, because there's only 24 lines in a song and you got one of them that nobody knows what it means. In the pop world, it doesn't matter. You can sing about, you know, purple fire extinguishers of desire.
Right.
And
I love that song.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
And when somebody goes, I don't know what that means, you can just kind of condescendingly look at them and go, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You'll get there someday.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't take enough drugs.
Oh, all right. Let's take a break. We're going to come back with more of Gary Burr, but this segment was brought to you by our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Yes, we love that dealership. They really go out of their way to give people a great experience, whether it's for shopping for a car or you get car service, that kind of thing. They've got a 3-day
exchange policy,
unlimited time and miles warranty, which is just unbelievable on new and used cars. So we just love that place. They do really well by their customers, and we're proud to send people there.
That's right. Go see George. He's the owner. He'll take good care of you. On the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. That's toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We're going to be right back with more of Gary Burr right here on the Music Row Show.
That. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. Our guest this hour is hit songwriter Gary Burr, and that's a great group that he's in called Blue Sky Writers, with the great Kenny Loggins and his wife Georgia Middleman, who's just an amazing writer in her own right.
Yes, she is.
And great singer too. And this is their debut album, Finally Home.
And
Blue Sky Writers. Is it? No, this is your new one, right?
No.
That's the debut album from a couple years ago. The new one is. We just finished. It's not out yet, but it's going to be out very soon, and we're really, really, really proud of it.
Sweet.
And you're going to want to stay tuned, because coming back from our next break, we're going to play you a little sneak peek.
We're going to preview some of it. Yeah.
Of something.
That's right. It's never been exposed to daylight before.
Whoa. This is very exciting. Very, very exciting. So let's talk a bit about Blue Sky Writers.
Yeah.
The sophomore project's coming out, like you said, sometime this year. Has the process changed as the newness wore off for you guys? Was it easier or harder putting this one together?
It was probably a little harder putting this one together. The biggest problem we have is we demand that all the songs be written with the three of us sitting in a room together.
Okay.
Knee to knee, guitars on our laps, and we write everything together. And we're in Nashville. He's in Santa Barbara. So, finding the times to get together to work were hard, and the studio times and the first record we had, Peter Asher co-produce it with us.
Right.
This time, and that was basically, we wanted somebody in there because we were worried that Kenny and I would sort of butt heads, because we're both alpha males, and we thought maybe we would, just end up with fist fights.
You needed someone that was used to working with large personalities.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And surprisingly, we all got along so great, and it was so fun that this time around we decided we could forego the referee.
And how'd that go?
It was fine. The record, the new record is just fantastic. It was really just time consuming because, to all get in the same place to work on things.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't do any sort of Skype writing or FaceTime writing?
No.
You have to physically be in the same room.
Okay. And we'd go out, he'd come here, or we'd go out to Santa Barbara, and we would stay for 4 days and write a song a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, we always kind of thought that we would write, 30 songs and then pick the 10 best. But it turned out that we needed 10 songs for the record, and we managed to get together to write 10 songs. But they're 10 great ones. There's not a bum one in the batch. It's all fantastic.
That's
so
great.
We can't wait for it to come out. We're discussing the plan over the next couple of days.
All right.
Talk about All Access Pass.
Oh, that's a cool thing. You know, if you go to the Blue Sky Writer website, you can click on something and you can buy something that we call the All Access Pass, and you can basically watch videos of us writing the entire album. You know, you can sit there and we filmed us writing the songs, and then we chop it up and make like a timeline of it.
Okay.
So that you're not sitting there watching us
10 minutes of silence.
Paint,
yeah.
Yeah. Paint dry.
Yeah.
But you can see how the song progresses from, I don't know, what do you got? I don't know. What do you got? I don't know. Well, how about this? Boom, 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 boom. To, you know, at the, and you watch the room get dark and the lights come on because we're working from 10 o'clock in the morning till 10, you know, 10 o'clock at night. And then at 10 o'clock, we play this, that final version of the song where we've actually kind of worked out the harmonies. And you remember what it was like when it was a tiny germ of an idea.
Right.
And then at the end, we're playing the whole song and singing all the three-part harmonies. And it's just a great journey to see how a song gets written with three writers all, you know, all struggling to get their ideas heard and struggling to not get their feelings hurt.
Mm.
And it's, you know, some of them are, you know, people stomping out of the rooms in tears. And yes,
was that you?
I am that sensitive. Okay. And, you know, and, you know, some of it is, you know, is people, you know, standing and yelling at each other and hugging and kissing each other. And that's basically me and Kenny.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I
didn't think otherwise.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a fascinating thing. So it's called All Access Pass. And I don't know of any other time when you can actually have an album and actually watch the people
on
the
idea.
Album creating the album. And it goes as far as us taking the songs into the studio and recording them, you know, recording the song with the crack
That's
band
cool.
here
I
in Nashville.
I love that idea. Yeah. That's like whoever thought of that, I'm hats off.
You're not wearing a hat.
Yeah, I know. That's why. So how does that dynamic differ then from other situations where you're in a band and it's, you're all writing songs, maybe not together, and everybody's contributing songs? It seems like that's a better way to go because everybody's working on every song, and so nobody's having a song left out.
Yeah, the one thing, we kind of went into it with the philosophy of Kenny didn't want to do another Kenny Loggins record.
Okay.
He was searching for something to do to get out of that, you know, to get away from having to do that because he didn't really have anything at the moment to say or any new horizon to reach. We were tired of, you know, trying to write a song for the next, you know, Kenny Chesney record.
Right.
So it was a great opportunity. The one thing we didn't want is we didn't want it to be like, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, where Crosby brings a song and teaches it to the other two guys and they do his song. We wanted to keep the songs from being to one person or another. We like the idea that when the three of us sit down and write, the end product of the song is like a fourth writer in the room.
Right.
And that writer was Blue Sky Riders. And so there's some parts of the song where you'll go, oh, I'll bet you Kenny did that part. And we'll go, no, that was actually George's part. And it's really cool that way. No song ends up sounding like another Kenny Loggins song or another Gary Burr song or another Georgia Middleman song. It's a whole different vibe. It's a whole different groove, and we love that. That was really important to us.
That's great.
Awesome.
We'd love to get another song out of you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Play whatever.
I don't know whatever.
Hopefully one of yours.
Yeah. Play one you wrote.
Okay. All right, here's a song. Speaking of the songwriter experience, you know how I was saying how I you know, stuck my finger down and came up with the title for the Alamo song? You know, when you're going to write a song, you write a song about some emotional thing you're going through or something you read about or heard about or saw in a movie or... you know, you're really trying to get that inspiration, that kernel of an idea. I'm going to play you a song now that Leanne Rimes recorded, and it did really well. And I just wanted to get the phrase jumbo shrimp in a song.
Okay.
That was important to me. I didn't think there was enough seafood-related country music. You know, I think, what was that comedy? Pinkerton Bowden had a song, I Lobster and Then I Flounder, something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I just, using that as inspiration, this song is one of the few country songs that has seafood in it.
Nice.
Like a cloud full of rain shouldn't hang in the sky. Ice shouldn't burn or a bumblebee fly. If you feel so happy, why do you cry? Oh, nothing about love makes sense. Like an ocean liner shouldn't float on the sea. A pearl in an oyster or a circus of fleas. Someone so perfect can't be falling for me. Oh, nothing about love makes sense. Nothing about love. Italian town, how does it lean? Something this strong shouldn't make me this weak. Oh, nothing about love makes sense. Nothing about love is less than confusing. You can win when you're losing, stand when you're falling. I can't figure it out. Nothing about love can make an equation of short of amazing. Which I could explain it, but I don't know how. Like the lights of Las Vegas growing out of the sand, a jumbo shrimp or a baby grain. How you touch my heart when you hold my hand. Oh, nothing about love makes sense. Oh, nothing about love makes sense. Oh, nothing about love makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, please, please.
Oh, makes
sense. No, no, continue, please, please.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry.
So you misunderstand.
I heard you say one time that you deliberately kept writing with a big notepad, a big, huge notepad.
Yeah, I do.
Do you still do that?
Absolutely.
I write with a giant. Talk about the reasons for that.
I write with a big sketch pad like you get at Michael's hobby craft store.
About 11 by?
Yeah, yeah.
Twice as big as a sheet of paper.
It's like, you know, 3 feet tall and 2 feet wide. And I've been doing it for years. So I have just, you know, I don't even know how many I have. I have 100 of them over the years stored away. Mm-hmm. And in there is every song that I've written. I like the size of it. I like being able to have room to put all the different versions of the lyrics. You know, at the end of the day, when you're trying to run it down, you don't have to flip a page.
Right. Depends how big you write, I guess.
Yeah, you know, true. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't remember who. Somebody told me that they did that, and I thought it was really interesting, and I tried it, and I love it. And I, you know, sometimes I write out two or three songs at once, mm-hmm. and I'll have the big pads. I'll have three of them set up around the room, and some night I'll go, oh, I'm going to see if I can get anywhere on this one over here. These are ones I'm writing by myself.
Yeah.
So I'll sit with that song for a while and see if I can come up with a line or two, and then move on to the next one the next day. And they all kind of grow up together. And I like being able to have them sitting in the room glaring at me. taunting me.
So you never use the computer then or iPad or anything like that?
No, I've never written a song. You know, when I'm close to being done and I have to sing it, I'll type it up and I'll put it on the screen in front of me I'm working the mixer. I couldn't remember the word. Mixer. I was going to say
that thingy, the sound control thingy. Panel. Yeah.
So, I've never gone to a writing appointment. I don't bring the big pad. If I go someplace, I'll mm-hmm. just have a little pad.
Right.
But I feel kind of, naked when I don't have my big pad in front of me.
Huh. The
maxi pad.
Don't say the maxi pad. I
like to write. That.
Why did you do that?
I don't know.
Hey, we need to take a break and
slap me around.
Thankfully, segment brought to you by Dogwood Cabin Rentals. I'm going to be playing in Townsend this weekend for the Snowdown with Karen Reynolds and Mark Allen Barnett, and we're going to be playing there. And if you want to come listen, please do. Townsend is a great little town, the peaceful side of the Smokies. And then rent a cabin from dogwoodcabins.com. You're going to love it there. That beautiful cabins, amazing views, no crowds. Dogwoodcabins.com. That's dogwoodcabins.com.
I love that.
Hold on. I love the hook here.
Answer to the questions you got. Why you, why me, why us, why now? Why not?
Nice.
That's a great song.
I like that a lot. We're here with Gary Burr, and that's his band, Blue Sky Riders, with Georgia Middleman and Kenny Loggins, all writing together and singing together on this brand new album that's coming out very soon. It's called BSR. It's called Why Not. That was the title track. That's what it looks like right there.
And that's the first time it's been played.
First time,
That's right.
I'm guessing they can obviously get it on y'all's website.
Blue Sky Riders. To the website. I'm sure it's on there somewhere.
It's on there somewhere, iTunes and all the usual places. So there you go.
So, okay. Again, Masterclass coming out April 22nd, 23rd, 24th here in Nashville. It's going to be you. It's going to be some other folks being part of it, doing critiques and seminars. So what mindset should one come to these type of seminars with to get the most out of the experience? So what should their expectations be? And you kind of touched on it already. Should they expect that they're going to be writing a hit song for Kenny Chesney by Monday?
No. I mean, you can't assume, we can't promise that you're going to write any song. The idea isn't to write a song. The idea is to bring the tools back home so that you can write 1,000 songs.
Right.
We work on one section of what makes up a song at a time. Sometimes you spend hours just working on what makes a good bridge. Or, sometimes you spend hours working on nothing but how to get the story across with economy, in 24 or 26 lines, which is what a song is, and how you... stay on point and make sure that people understand what you're singing about, and you don't waste any of those lines, taking the song down a road, down a rabbit hole that it doesn't need to take. It's all the tools that you then can go home and write songs.
Gotcha.
The odds are you won't write one song during this thing, but there's no reason to spend all the time trying to write a second verse when you can move on to the next thing that you should be learning about, writing other parts of the song.
Okay. That makes sense.
Interesting. Well, you are, because I've seen you play a few shows over the years, and you're a great guitar player. But you wrote a song in particular with Pete Wozner, a piano player, who we actually just had on
a few months back. Cool. Came in.
Check out the podcast at our website. But you wrote One Night a Day for Karth Brooks with him. What kind of door does that open for you creatively when you step away from the guitar? I don't know. Are you a piano player as well? Or
I am not a piano player, but I play rudimentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written... Back then, I had only written or started to write 2 songs on the piano.
Okay.
and both of them were successful.
Wow.
I that song there, I had like the opening four lines of that song, and I had it for a couple of years, and I couldn't get any farther. And I came to Pete, and I played that, and I said, and then I'm stuck. I have no idea. And he went, oh, no, it goes like this from that point on. And then he played something that I wouldn't, that I didn't know how my hands could ever have
right.
found those.
Right.
And so that's when that song opened up and became the Garth Brooks song. Mm-hmm. And then another thing, I had this little piano riff that I played for all these different writers, and no one wanted it, and no one thought it was worth anything. And I played it for Victoria, and because we have a certain relationship where I basically just told her she had to write this, or I would.
And she's a piano player.
Yes, and yep. she's a piano player, and you know, the little genesis of it that I had, the little germ, she took and expanded on, and we wrote a song called Too Busy Being in Love that Doug Stone had a big okay. hit with. And that was our first hit together. So that falls under the category, like I do in the, like I try to teach in the masterclass. It, you know, when I sit down to write a song at the piano, not being able to play the piano well is a positive boon. It's a plus, because I'm not going to fall into the same old things. And I know I'm going to write something strange, because my hands are going to go and put it and go all the wrong places.
Right.
And sometimes the wrong places are where mm-hmm. the magic is.
Do you use, in the same vein, do you use alternate tunings on the guitar to kind of do the same thing?
I've written a couple of songs on alternate tuning. We have a song on the new BSR album called Rodeo that was written with an alternate tuning. And I love doing that. I mean, I love the old Joni Mitchell, you know, stuff. And mm-hmm. I wish I wrote more like that. And I have no excuse why I don't, because I love it. Every time I think about it, I think I have a guitar home, you know, tuned to an open chord, and I can right. do it. I don't know why I don't. I'm an idiot.
Well, there's your homework.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
There you go. Just what he needed from us. All right, we're going to take one last break. We're here with Gary Burr. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Gary Burr, and that is a song off of another project that he has called Middleman Burr with his wife, Georgia Middleman, and that's the title track called I Like the Sound of That.
What does that CD look like?
It looks like that. Looks like that.
And
I'm sure you can buy that both at georgiamiddleman.com and garyburr.com.
Absolutely.
Now, that just brings up a question. My wife and I are both writers as well, and just what tips
not as well,
not as well, right? Thank you. But what tips do you have for anybody out there who writes with a spouse or tries to write with a spouse? Because it's obviously different than anybody, you know, another relationship.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know that you need any tips if you, you know, obviously, you know, there has to be a lot more respect, you know, because at 4 o'clock they're not going to walk out the door and disappear, and you
right.
have a week or a month or 2 months to get over mm-hmm. you know whatever argument you had about the song.
Right.
We love it. We just have such a great time. We that CD that we just finished, it's all songs that we wrote together. It's all, you know, it's all duets, and we just love to write together. So it's really easy and comfortable. And the first time we wrote together was probably 15 years ago. We wrote a song for her record when she was an artist. And
I have that album. Which song did you guys write?
You know, I don't think any of the songs she did do one of my songs, but I don't think any of the songs,
they
I don't think any of
on.
The songs we wrote made
oh, okay.
her record.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, it's if you're lucky enough to have you know, a spouse who's a writer mm-hmm. that you think is incredible, it's a pretty wonderful experience to be able to just sit around at night and go, you know, like last night, we just, there's nothing on TV. Let's write a song. I have an idea. Run to the piano.
Yeah.
3 hours later, we have a song and well, you know, you feel like John and Yoko.
That is really cool. That's refreshing because you could almost imagine that somebody who's been doing it as long as you have, that when you're on your time off, the last thing you want to do is write a song because that's your job. That's what you do. So it's actually kind of cool to hear that it excites you so much that you can do it on your off time and have fun with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we, it's just such a different experience that we literally could be writing all day with somebody else and still think that if we wrote together that night, it would be something we would look forward to and not go, oh my God, you know, we're punching in again. Uh-huh. We just punched out.
Yeah.
But we've been off over the holidays and we really haven't gotten back into the groove yet. I think our first writing appointments are this week with other people. Mm-hmm. So we've been kind of idle, and with the snowstorm and stuff, it was, you know, it was kind of the perfect romantic snow falling down. Let's light a couple of candles, sit at the piano, and write a song. Wow. Doesn't get better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to talk about another woman that you've done some work with, the Carole Kane Project. You're so accomplished and Hall of Fame writer, but are you ever starstruck going into a project? And how did that one take shape?
That one took shape because I got the chance to go to Europe, to France, where they have this writing retreat that they hold at a castle.
Yes, I've
heard
about
this. A lot
of
people do that. And back in the mid-90s, I got to do that 4 or 5 times and met some of my dearest friends, you know, longtime friends that I've had up till today from those sort of everybody thrown together, sink or swim and drink a lot of wine. And one of those castles, Carol was there, and she had been retired from writing for years and did this just, you know, for the experience, but it inspired her to write again.
Okay.
And it just inspired her that she missed the music. So a little while after the castle, she decided that she had been doing some benefits for political candidates and doing it by playing in people's living rooms with her and her guitar player, musical director, Rudy Guess.
Mm-hmm.
And she got the opportunity and the offers to go on tour. And she said, I'll do it, but I want to just do it the way it feels when I play in somebody's living room. So she said, I want to call it the living room tour. And I want to just do it, me and Rudy, and let's get one more person that can play guitar and bass and sing harmonies. And she just, I was lucky enough that she just said, I know who we should get that I had a lot of fun with and can do that. Call Gary Burr. And I was like thrilled to get that phone call. And we traveled all over the world together for years.
Well, I want to live vicariously through you for a minute because another opportunity you've had that you've toured with all over the world is Ringo Starr. You were part of his band for several years. Mm-hmm. What the heck was that like? I mean, that must have been a great thing. How did that happen and what was it like?
Yeah, that was an unbelievable thrill. You know, here's the story to that. My friend, who I also met at one of the castles, Mark Hudson, writing with Ringo and wrote an album.
Yeah.
And they were going to go out and promote it and put a band together. So he called me up on the phone, and I wasn't there, but he left a message on my answer machine saying, Ringo's going to go on tour. We're going to do these shows. We're going to London. We're going to do a video. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we want you to be part of the band. And here's the money amount. Boom. This amount of money. And I called him back and I said, will he take a check? Because I will pay him that to play with a Beatle. And they you know, flew me out and I got to play Yellow Submarine and a little help from my friends. And we were backstage getting ready to go out at the bottom line and play a show. and the guy, the announcer, came and said, okay, I'm going to go out and say, ladies and gentlemen, Ringo Starr, and then you walk out. And he goes, no. He goes, what? He goes, it's Ringo and the Roundheads. And we all, the band looked at each other and went, I guess we're the Roundheads. He never told us. We don't know what it means. We don't know, but we were Roundheads for about 6 or 7 years.
That's fantastic.
Didn't he also call it All-Star Band at some point?
No, that's a different entity. Every summer with a collection of guys that are all artists and stars of their own right.
Gotcha.
And for his albums, for a period of time, we would go to London, sit, write the albums.
Gotcha.
We'd write all day, go have dinner, come back after dinner, and we would record whatever we wrote that day.
Oh my God.
And go behind the drums and, you know, me playing whatever I grabbed first. And that band was the Roundheads. We created, nice. We did about 4 albums together.
Love that.
All right, we're out of time.
No!
Thank you so much. Gary.
I have so many interesting. Oh, well.
GaryBurr.com, BlueSkyWriters.com, Masterclass, April 22nd through the 24th. Thank you so much. This
Thank
has been
you
such
very
a pleasure.
Much.
Glad to be here. Glad to be. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad we all survived the big storm.
Phew. Yeah. All right. Well, go check them out. Literally, this is a great album. Blue Sky Writers, lots of great music. Definitely go check that out. And then come to themusicrowshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll see you next week on The Music Row Show.